I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with Tap to Pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone. So Money, episode 1255, The Business of Books, with Rochelle Fretson, founder of Purposeful Platforms.
You're listening to So Money with award-winning money guru Farnoosh Torabi. Each day, get a 30-minute dose of financial inspiration from the world's top business minds, authors, influencers, and from Farnoosh herself. Looking for ways to save on gas or double your double coupons? Sorry, you're in the wrong place. Seeking profound ways to live a richer, happier life? Welcome to So Money.
Publishers are looking for now in this moment is, where's your thriving community, right? Is it on social? Is it an arm of your business? Are you actually forward-facing teaching and talking about what you want to write about, right? Have you tested the waters with the ideas that you have? Where's the social proof?
Welcome to So Money, everybody. It is Monday, September 20th. I'm your host, Farnoosh Torabi. We are going to go behind the scenes and learn more about the publishing industry from one of its pros. Rochelle Fretson is the founder of Purposeful Platforms. She is a book publishing consultant and proposal coach. She's helped many authors land multi-six-figure book deals. In the last year alone, she has led clients to millions of dollars worth of book deals. She has extensive knowledge, helping aspiring authors, guiding them through the book development process from concept to proposal to agent introductions. And I know this firsthand because Rochelle plucked me out of book proposal hell earlier this year when I was just, I was spiraling. I was trying to get this proposal done, a kind of proposal that I'd never really attempted before that was really narrative driven, short story driven, personal. And I went on Instagram to complain, I guess. And she found me and said, let me help you. And she gave me a real clear plan, lots of guidance, great feedback. And guess what? I sold the book months later, and I am now going to be coming out with my fourth book, A Healthy State of Panic. You probably know this. It's coming out in 2023. And it's all about why I am the person I am when it comes to making decisions about money and life and career and kids. It's not been a straight line. And I've had a crazy upbringing, a crazy life. And it's all been helpful to me as I have now been able to establish boundaries in my life, know what I want. And I want to give that to you in the form of a book. All those lessons, all of those frameworks, and all those nutty stories about growing up in Worcester to immigrant parents who basically raised me not to run towards life, but run away from death. That was the, as I'm thinking about life, I'm like, that was my mom. She never really encouraged us to take chances or embrace life. It was always about death is around the corner, hide. And you know what? It kind of paid off, to be honest. And Rochelle got that. And she was able to help me put that all into a nice proposal that then my agent went and sold to Simon & Schuster. And I am forever indebted to her. And I said, you know, you need to come on the podcast and tell all my listeners, some of you out there might be interested in writing a book, maybe self-publishing or traditional publishing. Michelle has all of the knowledge. She's going to walk us through the financials, how to get book proposal ready. She is dubbed the six-figure book deal coach. Clients go on to get book deals from Simon & Schuster, Penguin Random House, Hachette, many more. She also has an awesome podcast, which I have just been on. She's a great interviewer. It's called Bound and Determined. So if you want more of her insights, more conversations with authors who've recently gone through the publishing process, she does this all on her podcast. Without further ado, here is Rochelle Fredson. Rochelle Fredson, welcome to So Money. You made my 2021 a career success in some ways.
Oh, that is very kind.
Sometimes I get personal on the show and sometimes I bring on people from my life. And honestly, you're a new person in my life. I'm a new person in your life. You can do this in your 40s, everybody. You can make great relationships past college, in fact. And I was just telling my brother and his girlfriend over our vacation last week, I was like, if you're not ghosting people in your 20s, you're not adulting right. And don't worry, because you will find even better people in your 30s and your 40s when you actually know what your purpose of life is and what makes you fulfilled. Anyway, I digress. Rochelle, I'm so happy to have you on the show to introduce you to my audience. For those of you who might follow me on Instagram, you may have seen me praising this woman. You may have heard me on her podcast, Bound and Determined. But Rochelle found me on Instagram. Well, we had been sort of connected previously, but caught me in a moment of duress on Instagram when I was on there and talking about how I was in book proposal hell. And she was like, we should talk because this is what I do for a living. I help people create proposals that then go on to get sold to major publishers. I am the book proposal whisperer. And I said, I need you in my life. So we started talking, we started working together, and it was a promising bill of goods. You delivered. Within months, I had the biggest book deal of my life with Simon & Schuster, whom I've never published with before, the ultimate publisher, for a book that I'm just beyond excited for. You know, I say it has nothing to do with money and everything to do with money. It's called A Healthy State of Panic, How to Win at Life When the World is Out to Get You. More on that later. There'll be many episodes on the genesis of that and why I wanted to write that. But welcome to the show. And thank you for allowing me to be this next level person that I've always wanted to be, this memoirist.
I love this so much. And thank you so much for having me. Honestly, you prove the point that I make to people all the time. And that is that it doesn't matter if it's your first book or your 20th book. There are all of these emotions and hangups that come up when you're going through the process. And part of it's overwhelm, and there's vulnerability, and there's comparison. Like, there's all of these emotions that come into this process. And I loved that you were very transparent about the overwhelm of this book proposal. And I was happy to help you. Easy breezy.
And it was, to your point, not my first ride around the rodeo. I have written several books, but it had been a while. It had been, you know, since I last wrote a book proposal, probably 10 years or 9 years, something like that. Books take a while, everybody. You know, you write the proposal and that takes a year, then you sell it and then you write it and then it comes out. And then from when you hit pen to paper and you see it at Barnes and Noble, 3 years have gone by.
Yeah.
At earliest, at fastest. So it's a journey. And with that comes all those emotions for all those years. It's a commitment on an unprecedented level. And yet I always tell people, we all have books inside of us. We should all write a book. And now, I used to say this 10 years ago, when before we had like Instagram and YouTube and TikTok and courses. And I guess my point is everybody should have something that they own that is like their creative license, property. Books for me have been the bedrocks of my career. But for others, it could be YouTube. It could be, you know, digital courses. It could be speaking. But why did you want to dedicate your career to helping people with their literary careers?
My parents still laugh that I went into publishing at all because I was the kid that would never finish a book. In high school, college, forget about it. I was like the Cliff Notes kid, which for anyone that doesn't know what Cliff Notes is now, you can just use Google, you know, to cheat the system and figure out what these books are about. But I actually started my career in PR at an agency in Southern California and was doing big launches for Sony, McDonald's, Chicken of the Sea Tuna, like big brands, and realized pretty quickly that it felt a little soul-sucking to me. This was not going to be my forever career. And actually, by mistake, got a call from a publisher that was hiring. I had left my resume up on Monster ages ago. And although I wasn't actively looking, they said, come in, you know, we publish, you know, about 25 to 50 products a year. You know, it's a great community. So I ended up going and falling in love with the people and their passion for these books. And although it wasn't an industry I ever thought I'd be in, I loved it because it was mission driven. And there's something so cool about amplifying people's like hopes and dreams and expertise. And so 20 years later, now I've held so many different types of positions in publishing that that's what gives me the cool lens to coach people now, is from PR to marketing to acquisitions. I've done it all. And so, you know, I know what I love to do, and that's really hone in and create marketable book ideas from the ground up.
For those listening who are like, yes, I'm onto this. I want to write a book. I want to share my expertise with the world, or I have wisdom to spread. What is your advice? Because I think that there is truth to the fact that you need to have a platform in many cases to get that traditional book deal. Of course, anybody can publish, self-publish tomorrow if you wanted to. There are tools to help you with that. But if you wanted to go the Simon and Schuster route, what are the ingredients these days that publishers are looking for besides, of course, a great idea?
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely more options for people now than there were 5-6 years ago, even in routes of publishing. You mentioned self-publishing. Hybrid publishing is a growing model that gives authors a lot of control creatively around their process. And in traditional publishing, it's no surprise the platform is a piece of the pie, right? The social media is certainly a component, but a lot of times I talk to people and they're freaked out about the platform building and they think social media is the only avenue. And what I do is I talk about it in buckets. So social media is one bucket of the platform, but speaking and partnerships and people that you know and programs that you run in your business are all part of your bigger platform. So what publishers are looking for now in this moment is, where's your thriving community? Right? Is it on social? Is it an arm of your business? Are you actually forward-facing teaching and talking about what you want to write about, right? Have you tested the waters with the ideas that you have? Where's the social proof around that? So, you know, books are a great tool to grow our business. And so if we actually look at developing books and selling books in a lane that feels close to our expertise, it's a lot easier than like if I teach meditation and I want to sell a book about house cleaning or vacuums or anything like that. You don't want to disconnect. You want to try and keep it connected. And that lights publishers up because they know that you're grounded in that work.
Mm. I feel like, and you know more, but do you feel like there is a new dawn in the publishing industry with regards to, I think I read last year, like so many books were purchased in the pandemic. It was sort of, some publishers went from being in the red to in the black, being profitable in the pandemic of all times. With that too, there was an appetite for more storytelling, more personal narrative from all walks of life. So when I started writing, you know, 15 years ago, you go to these pitch meetings and everybody's looks like me, a white skinned person. And now I think that is changing, or there is a demand for that to change. And that's going to also be reflected in what we see on the bookshelves and on the you know, bookstores. So talk a little bit about like what you're seeing, the sort of the shifts you're seeing from the within the industry.
It's interesting. I think storytelling is really coming back in a way where it sort of fell out of style for a little bit. There are certainly publishers and agents that specialize in memoir and narrative, certainly, but short form narrative is coming back, which is similar to what you're writing, right? I did it with Jen Winston and her book Greedy about the bisexual narrative. That sort of short story format is coming back for a younger reader. So the 30s and 40 somethings, which is very cool. And I think Glennon Doyle kind of set us off in that direction with Untamed, which is awesome. And to your point, there are publishers being much more conscious of a diverse community, both in their publishers and with the authors that they sign with, because the human experience is better when we get to hear and learn from different voices and different experiences. And so they are consciously making efforts to make sure that they have diverse representation in all lanes of publishing, which is wonderful.
Why did you want to leave the publishing world as far as, you know, in-house and start your own thing? And I believe you did this right as you were having a child or had a child, similar to my story. I feel like mommyhood, parenthood is sometimes, they call it the baby effect.
It was probably 90% hormones.
Things get real. And so while, you know, it looks like you're taking a big risk, but also like, you're planning for your future. You're like, I know that I need to have flexibility in my life, so maybe I should start a business. Is that, what was your story?
Yeah. I mean, up until I had my son, I was such a career tracker, right? I prided myself on climbing the corporate ladder and just giving and over delivering and just being that person. And that served me really well for a long time. Like, I loved the hustle and I thrived on that chaos. And when I had Cooper, you know, I was home for 2 months, 2.5 months, and went, what would it look like if I only did the parts of my job that I really loved? Because now I realize the value of my time, you know, and it's like, I loved the job I had. I loved the people I worked with. And so that decision was really based on the fact that in those early years of his life, I didn't want to miss the moments. I knew he was probably going to be an only. I just wanted to be there. And when I looked at, you know, rising through the ranks of a company and how much of my time was spent creatively giving output versus what was sort of managerial and the paperwork side of things and maintaining relationships, I decided I really wanted to get my hands dirty again. And so I had this complete creative download that happened 2.5 months postpartum. And I started creating a business plan for what it would look like someday, right? You know, 5, 6, 8 years down the road. And I went back to work and very quickly realized the shoe didn't fit anymore. I just felt like it wasn't for me anymore. And I could pass the torch to somebody else who would really love that role. And I wanted to focus on people that didn't have the roadmap to get published, right? Like, when you work with all the top New York Times bestselling authors, they have teams that support them. And there's all these people with great stories and great work that aren't getting recognized because they don't know how to get there. Mm-hmm. And so I decided that would be my whole mission. And I never looked back.
It's something, right? You talk about this creative download months after having a child. I had that experience. I launched this podcast months after having Evan. I find that there has to be a science to that. Like, there has to be a physiological, biological thing that's happening in our bodies, right? In our brains. Yeah. I feel like I've read about this.
There is something to it. I was creative in a way that I hadn't seen in like 2 decades. It's just everything like downloaded to me.
Well, it's something, I don't know, but maybe it's another podcast, but there's something to it, right? Because you become really protective suddenly, right? As a new parent, you take on these new personality traits that dominate. Mm-hmm. And of course, protective of your child, but then maybe you're also being protective of just the ecosystem within you are raising this family, right? And making sure that you're doing what you can to quote unquote control and inputs and outputs. It's interesting. Maybe we'll have to like bring on an expert on that. I don't know.
And back then, I believe when I first started the business, I believed in the illusion of balance, which I no longer believe in. My B word is boundaries. I try and maintain boundaries.
Yes.
But balance, forget about it.
I love saying no. And you were the one who said that to me. You know, I tend to apologize when I'm like, I can't do this or I won't do this. I won't go on TikTok. And you're like, you're a woman who knows her boundaries.
I remember working with Terry Cole, who's a psychotherapist and wrote a book called Boundary Boss. And she...
Ooh, I like that.
I thought that I had really strong boundaries until I worked with her. And I was like, oh, I don't know anything about boundaries, because so much of it is rooted in codependency that you don't even know is there. Yes. And the people pleasing and all the things that, you know, women especially are told they need to be. So it's a constant effort on my end, certainly.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
The weather's getting warmer as I record. It's a nice 73 degrees on the East Coast. So finally, time to say goodbye to jackets and sweaters and, fingers crossed, hello to shorts and tees. And I need to update my wardrobe for the long haul. And, you know, I don't want to spend a fortune. So luckily, I found Quince. I'm honest. I've got a lineup of timeless pieces from Quince that keep me looking effortlessly chic year after year. I'm talking premium European linen dresses, blouses and shorts from $30, washable silk tops, timeless 14-karat gold jewelry, and tons more. Best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. I have t-shirts from Quince, pajamas from Quince. My very chic and fashionable sister-in-law, Hannah, her whole closet is Quince. And people often stop us and ask, where did you get this? Don't tell me the price. And then when I do, they're shopping on Quince.com. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to Quince.com/somoney for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's Quince.com/somoney to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/somoney. Did you know that I'm a podcast host and also a mind reader? Because I know that you want to grow your portfolio, to deal with the rising costs of inflation, to pay off your debt or your mortgage. You want to attack pretty much anything standing in the way of you and your financial freedom, right? Well, here's one solution. More knowledge. This podcast helps, I hope. And you can use Yahoo Finance, where you can get access to the news, data, and tools that you need to help reach your definition of financial freedom. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. They're the number one finance destination, and I know because I worked there for many years, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, customizable charts, so much more. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com. For the longest time, I dreaded buying bras. It was like shopping for jeans. Impossible. You want a bra that's sexy? You want a bra that's comfortable? You can't have both. Well, now you can, thanks to Third Love. Third Love was started to take all the frustration, the ick, the ugh, out of bra shopping. That's why they make solutions for every bra problem or problem. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen since high school. Get smoothing, you know where, and have straps that actually stay put. Designed at their headquarters in San Francisco and made with premium materials, they put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before it's given the stamp of boob approval. Comfort and support are guaranteed. Plus, whether you're a double A cup or an H cup, their virtual fitting room will help you find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups. No more feeling stuck between two cup sizes that don't fit. It's time to get your problems solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get $15 off your order with the code podcast15. And just to make it financially applicable, I mean, that is true in your financial life too. You have to set standards and boundaries in your financial life. I won't spend money on that.
Yeah,
but I will on these things. It's sort of showing what your priorities are.
Yeah. And the connection of fear and money, I mean, you will dive into this, mm-hmm. you know, in Healthy State of Panic, mm-hmm. but it's interesting because I was talking to someone this morning who's an entrepreneur and she said, how did you not get fearful in the moments where your business was quiet? And I said, mm-hmm. well, because it was trial and error. And at the beginning I had to say yes to some things out of money that I very quickly realized were not good fits. So when you are further into your business, you start to realize that if you stay aligned with who your ideal client is and stop saying yes to things out of the financial scarcity, you end up in a much better position. But it's at the beginning, you know, it's trial and error.
And I know I've known you for about a year. And even if in that time you have shared some anecdotes of, you know, clients that, you know, anonymously, of course, you don't divulge details. You're a good person, but you do tell me, you know, I have this potential client, this person's being a bit aggressive? What do I do? Can you talk a little bit about how you've learned and the growing pains in sort of realizing your boundaries, identifying your boundaries?
Yeah. I mean, I think it really came from a few yeses that should have been no's, right? That everything in my body was telling me that I was not going to be the right person to help them. And at the end of the road, they may not be happy. And those people sort of naturally started to fall away when I got really clear with my vetting process and what I was here to do. So I typically see people come to me in two lanes. One is that they have a business, they really want to write something that's going to help bring them clients or break them out in media or speaking events. And then I have the people that want to write for passion, or they want to tell their story and it's personal and vulnerable. And the hardest part of my job is determining if it's the right time for them, because everyone feels it's the right time for them. But from the outside looking in, sometimes they're in the middle of extreme growth and transformation. And if I start working with them to develop the book in that moment, by the time we get 3 months down the road, they're going to want to write a different book. And so I'm having to sort of assess, and I am no substitute for therapy, but things can get deep, of figuring out when the right time is for people so mm-hmm. that they're not wasting their money and I'm not wasting my time. It has to be the right moment to create. Yeah.
I'll tell you, a pet peeve of mine is when I meet somebody who just wants to write the book to get famous or write a book to get on the New York Times bestselling list or just add a line to their bio. And I'm like, that's a disgrace.
Yeah, I've had to be really transparent, as transparency is the name of the game for me. And I had someone the other day that had was alluding on the call that writing books was going to be their primary source of income. And so I had to be the person to break the news that that's like 1% of people, right? Like if you want to make fast money, do the online course, do a membership community, do a group program, something like that. But books are a long game and they're beautiful for so many reasons, and legacy and impact and hope and all of that. But it's not a fast money-making process. Yeah. And so when people lean so heavily into that, I have to be honest with them about what to expect.
Books are a long game, but I believe in the fruit at the end of that. Like I have mm-hmm. seen it in my own career as a platform building tool, as a tool to go out there and build authority and speak and all of those things. So who you like to work with? Like how would you describe your current group of clients now? Who are you looking to work with? What kind of author excites you?
Yeah. I mean, mostly mission-driven people, right? Anyone who has built their career or their business around changing the world or changing the way that we look at things. So I have some books that would be considered, social advocacy and things like that really excite me, because it's in a sense being on the front end of a much larger curve that's coming down the pipeline. So I like being on the front end of conversations. I love entrepreneurs just because I have such an entrepreneurial spirit. So people who are, building their coaching practices or their businesses, but they've been established for a little bit of time and they know with certainty what people want from them, because there's often a gap, right, between what we want to write and what people actually want from us. So if they're clear on what that middle ground is, it's a good position, and that lights me up. And I love personal stories. So people that want to share their story. I love prescriptive memoir. So story with a little bit of teaching or reflection, but really mission-driven people who just want to be change makers in a bigger way.
And you recently started a podcast as you're building your business and Bound and Determined. You've had on some of your own authors on the show. What is the promise of the podcast?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I was convinced to do it by a dear friend. Like, I would have never chosen to do a podcast on my own, but we're sitting one day co-working and he's like, "You have so much random information in your brain from the last 20 years and holding different positions. Like, people don't know this information." And he's like, "Here's what this could look like." And the second it wasn't about me and it was about highlighting other people in the industry and hearing their stories of publishing, I was like, I'm in. Like, that's exciting, right? I want to lift the veil on what is a somewhat confusing process. And so the whole mission behind that show is for me to be able to teach what I teach my own clients, to help people move through the process, and then to hear from industry experts and authors who have done it and who are the decision makers, so that people can be guided and know exactly what's available to them.
Mm-hmm. I ran a workshop called Book to Brand for 5 years. Like you, like I had all this knowledge of having done it myself over the years. And I had all this people in my network, literary agents, publishers. I was like, let's bring everybody together and just teach it to those who want to learn in a very fast, intense way over 2 days. But it led to many book deals. And, you know, Rachel Rogers is a graduate. She's the author of Everyone Should Be a Millionaire.
I love Rachel.
And, she's great. And so one thing that I heard, the feedback that I got from some of the participants, some of the people who wanted to write books who were getting a lot of no's from the agents or the publishers, whoever, whatever stage they were at, it was like, you don't have enough Instagram followers. Your Twitter following is not very impressive. And I think that that's a cop out. I think that if you have a really good concept, you know, maybe it's not a yes now, but if they believe in you, they might want to still work with you and say, okay, let's parallel to working on this idea. Like, I want you to get your social media up because I want this to be a success. And and so what do you think? Do you think that publishers and agents are as forthright as they should be?
Yeah, I love this question because I've been on both sides of the deal. So I have two different perspectives on this and they meet in the middle somewhere. So the first is that obviously if you have a platform or a following, you're going to have an easier time selling your book, right? Because you've curated the community of people that want it. So yeah, certainly that's going to help. Is it a deal breaker if you don't have the platform? No. I've had clients with 5,000 followers get six-figure deals, and I've had people with 200,000 followers get more modest deals. So it's not the end-all be-all. It is great for your business though. So you want to be curating the platform for your business. If you're going to sell the book to your people, you kind of want them to be there. So think of the platform not as the sort of gatekeeper for the book deal, but how it's going to benefit your business. But agents are people too, right? They like to acquire things that they know are going to be an easy sell or that isn't a topic that lights them up. And ultimately, when clients get rejection at any point of their process, I have to remind them that agents aren't deciding what's good or bad. They're deciding what they can sell well based on their professional experience. So to get that feedback and not internalize it, and this is good feedback, you know, wherever you're getting feedback in your business or your life, right? It has more to do with that person than it does about you. So I would never say to like abandon the project if that was the type of feedback you were getting. It just takes finding the right agent and the right publisher that sees the vision.
That's a great, great way to think about it. You know, a lot of people also say, why even bother to go through the rigmarole of finding an agent, getting a publisher? It takes 3 years. Why? When I can just self-publish, it looks just as good as a book on the shelf at Barnes & Noble, and I can start building authority in a month as opposed to in 3 years. And there's merit to that argument. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, this is why there's more options available now than ever before. I think that if someone wants to self-publish, obviously you're keeping all the money. You are responsible for creating a professional product, however, so you might want to invest in an editor or a designer to make it professional. That's certainly a great route to go. I have a friend who self-publishes all of her books and loves it and would never do it differently. But now there's a newer model emerging, which is hybrid publishing, which is the middle ground between self-publishing and traditional publishing. And while you don't get paid in advance, you do have a complete internal team, right, that helps you with editing and promotion, but they also have distribution. So a lot of them are partnered with major publishers like Macmillan, Simon & Schuster to sell your book into Barnes & Noble and Target and Costco and all of those places. So now there's this cool model that goes, okay, I can keep creative control. I can have this book out in a year as opposed to 2 to 3, and I can get in stores. Like, what's not to love? So I have a lot of clients that choose that route. So there's just a lot of options. It's very personal at the end of the day. It has to do with the timing, your business, your platform. You know, it's just it's a personal decision.
Well, this is a money show. So I want to talk a little bit about personal finance with you. And I know you'll go there with me. So in a pandemic with a three-year-old and everybody working from home, how did business do? Did you have to make any really hard financial decisions in the last year?
Yeah. I mean, it almost feels, I don't want to say I'm embarrassed to say this, but the truth is it feels a little icky to say that the pandemic was the biggest time in my business I've ever had.
Wow.
And I think the reason I spent a lot of time thinking about the reasoning behind that, there was more business than I could even handle. And I had to turn stuff down out of time and bandwidth. But I have this belief that when we're faced with our own mortality and the world turns upside down, we suddenly want to put focus on all the things that we've been putting on the back burner. So people were coming to me and saying, I don't want to wait anymore. I don't want to put this thing off. Like, I have it in my heart. I want to do it. And now has to be the time. And they were at home. They needed a creative outlet. They needed something for them. Because I think what happened for me in the pandemic was like, I was at like high stress, right? Toddler at home, like locked in a New York City apartment. We didn't leave
potty
our apartment.
Training, for, sleep like, training, yeah. All of that.
We didn't leave our apartment for like 79 days or something like that. You know, wiping down the groceries, doing all the things because in the epicenter, we didn't know what was going on. But at the same time, to have that influx in my business and people needing emotional support from me during that process too was a lot. Like I really felt when I hit June of this year, you know, and I'd been going for, you know, 12, 14 months at that pace that June of this year hit. And I went, oh my God, I need an exhale. Like I suddenly felt it. But you know, in a way I loved that people started prioritizing this dream that they had had for so long.
Yeah. I'm raising my hand. Absolutely. It was an inflection point in so many of our lives. If we were fortunate enough to have the space, the headspace to be like, okay, what do I really want from my life? And you know, you start questioning all of your life decisions.
I can tell you my biggest pandemic financial regret was, and that was the Peloton bike.
Yes. Sorry. I don't mean to enjoy your misery.
That is like a coat rack in our living room.
I got so close to buying it. And I do not like to cycle.
No.
So you know that marketing is good. That marketing is so good. It, you know, it's really not even the marketing of Peloton. It's all of the enthusiasts, like my friend Terry Trispicio. You know, she's a friend of the podcast. She's a friend of both of ours. She's ripped. She looks great. She's been Pelotoning all pandemic. And I saw her and I was like, what are you doing? And she's like, I've just been Pelotoning. And I said, oh my God, I went on the website. But here's my financial advice to everybody. Before you buy the bike, download the app. You know, I got it for 2 months for free. And I got to remind myself to cancel it because I never even used the app.
Yeah. I mean, had I actually ever gone to a class, I would have known that the first 5 minutes on the bike was going to make me break out in full body hives.
Oh,
and I can't get that $3,000 back.
You can sell it on Facebook Marketplace for close to probably what you paid for it.
Yeah.
If you're willing to deliver it to their house, maybe.
Yeah. It's aspirational. It's sitting there like one day we might use it.
Oh my gosh. That commercial was the best though. The one that went viral with the husband gets the wife the Peloton. What would you do if your husband got you a Peloton for the holidays?
I mean, I don't know.
I've asked for weirder things.
Like
I'd rather get
pot.
A vacuum. I don't know. I just feel like...
I don't know if it's a Dyson, I'll take it, you know?
Yeah, I'll take a Dyson over. Rochelle Fredson, thank you so much for so many things that I don't even know yet because this book hasn't even come out. And that's really the beauty of a book sometimes is like I always tell authors and authors to be, it's like there's this magic of when you release it into the universe and you wait for all the bounty to come and you don't even know, you know, it could be like a phone call. Someone calls and says, your book changed my life. I want you to come speak at my company. All it takes is the right people to read your book sometimes. Mm-hmm. And they see the potential and they feel like they can turn it into something else or something bigger. And there is big stuff on the other side of writing a book always.
Yeah. Ripple effect for sure.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Rochelle. Have a great rest of your week.
Thank you.
Thank you to Rochelle for joining us. Check out purposefulplatforms.com for more about Rochelle and her coaching and her podcast, Bound and Determined. On Wednesday, we're talking to Dori Clark, who is the author of the new book, The Long Game. Such an important concept. Stay tuned. Thanks for joining. And I hope your day is so money. Hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with Tap to Pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.